I'm Penny and I am an alcoholic. Oh boy. I was so happy last week with being done because I had no idea how all my material was going to come together, and I was pretty happy. And then this week, I kept typing and typing and typing and typing. So unfortunately, I think I'm going to be doing more reading than I did last week. I think every week is going to be different. Even though my apprehension after last week was lowered, it seemed to have resurfaced last night as I laid in bed like a brick, and it was 9 o'clock and I didn't get much sleep the night before, so I thought I'm going to go to bed early, not turn on the TV. So I'm laying there like this and Eric comes up. He goes, "What are you doing?" I go, "Step two." And he goes, "You did step 2 years ago." I go, "No, doofus, I'm trying to, you know, rehearse for tonight." So I have no idea what's going to be happening here, but you know, I am grateful for this opportunity. I did not mention that last week. You know, it is an opportunity to really delve into what I thought I knew and what I do know about my own personal journey. And so tonight, it's very personalized. And if you're here tonight and struggling with step two, which is to rely upon a higher power, I pray my experience moves you towards an acceptance of a power greater than yourself. And step two is came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore us to sanity. So tonight, again, I'm grateful that I can share my experience about refinding God, because that was my experience. And I just hope that by sharing my experience, strength, and hope about step two, that if anyone is kind of stuck there, that they can move forward. So what is hope? People can spend days, weeks, years looking in the wrong place for the meaning of life. They can be seeking it in money, family, their appearance, approval, alcohol, drugs. I mean, the list goes on forever, right? So I did some word searching, and I don't know if this was from a dictionary, but the definition of hope is wanting something to happen or be the case. And that's kind of like, you know, oh, I hope I win the lottery type explanation. But the other one I found was desired accompanied by expectation of or belief in fulfillment. So tonight I suspect that, you know, a lot of you have different views on a higher power. So I said a prayer tonight, and I found that prayer in Ephesians 1:18, and it goes, "I prayed that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you." And I love that word hope. It kept surfacing over and over. It's like, what's that? That's not even in step two. But that's what I discovered as I started working on this last week. So hopefully you don't hear judgment tonight, but consider the hope that awaits you. You know, that expectation that something good is about to happen as you embark on this journey. May you have a burning desire to investigate God and develop a personal, intimate relationship with Him. And again, I just hope that this journey, if you've not started it, begins tonight. So a little bit about the higher power. Today, I'm cut from a cloth, the Dr. Bob cloth, as I like to call it. He was kind of a hardliner, and it's interesting when you read the history about how AA started. You don't hear much about Dr. Bob, but he told his prospects to surrender to God. And from what I've read, the original members were not all that happy about compromises like God as we understand him. And it's interesting they looked at that as a compromise, because Bob had a real strong belief in the triune God and a Christian God. So as I trudge my path of happy destiny, I find myself with the same convictions. I've been doing this for a while, so you're going to find out that I didn't have those convictions earlier. But I too embraced a God of my understanding in early sobriety. You know, thank goodness God waited for me. I was definitely lost and seeking. So I chose God as my higher power because I believe He was bigger than me. In my mind, He was bigger than a meeting, bigger than the 12 steps. He was bigger than the proverbial AA doorknob. For me, there is an emptiness in believing in a non-living God. So, you know, that was just a natural way for me to progress. The other thing I jotted down was that some people are work-based, like, if I do this, God's going to approve of me. Or maybe it's a set of higher thinking. It's choosing a word like love. That's what God is, love. All of those things. I had to be careful of that because I was definitely work-based from coming out of the womb, I swear. And so both of those approaches had a tendency to inflate my ego, and I did not need my ego inflated. So I just needed something plain and simple. I needed love and grace from my higher power. And it took a long time to come to that realization that that's really what I needed. So even though I was drawn to following the only God I had ever known, I was still rebellious. I was blind and full of doubt, so I chose to follow a God that was not of my understanding. There was so much I didn't understand about Him, so I took what I liked and I left the rest, thereby in the end creating a God of my understanding. So I piecemeal God because otherwise I would have run the other way. This approach saved me and kept me sober for years. But until I came to terms with the real issue, which was pride and ignorance, I was halted in any real spiritual growth. And yes, I had enough belief to stay sober, which was really important early on. But after years of this, I was concerned that one day sobriety wouldn't be enough. You know, that's a little bit of that, you know, enhancing our spiritual condition. That is why, you know, I'm able to stay sober day in and day out. So during my first 5 years or so, I was spiritually shaky and I was lacking conviction and I was confused. I was on the fence, as they say. I was at odds with God and I was in rebellion. And that might sound kind of weird. It's like, well, you just got done saying you had this whole thing going on. I think today, looking back, see, I have that perspective of looking back, and that I can see what I was doing, and you know, I'm very grateful that, you know, God sustained me through somewhat dry years. I was pretty busy doing a lot of things in order to stay sober, so. You know, God's grace kind of came in and I was able to keep myself out of trouble, right? I didn't have time for trouble. I was very active in these rooms when I first got here. So anyways, I wanted it all. I wanted to have my way and yet be overlooked for my misdeeds. I wanted God to give me what I thought I wanted. I thought life was unfair. I thought it was hard. I thought God wanted from me blind obedience to a set of rules with no room for individuality, no fun, no happiness, no joy. That's what I thought God wanted from me. And, you know, I found out otherwise. Today, I still can't fully explain my higher power. And you know what? I don't want to and I don't need to. And that's a great place to be. I abandoned the mindset that I have to be able to explain. My job is simply to believe. God will reveal Himself. That is His job, not mine. I had to step out in faith and trust that more shall be revealed. much like I had to step out in faith when I started my journey with the 12 steps in sobriety. So getting okay with sharing who my higher power is has been a long process for me. For most of my recovery, I was quiet about God because I didn't want to be viewed as stupid or narrow-minded. So in order to be accepted by some, I did temper my enthusiasm. That is not the case anymore. I started examining, well, why was I so rebellious? And, you know, I just believe that I'm born that way, that people were born that way. I remember years ago I saw a study on television where they were trying to determine when do children start lying and why, you know, and it was some little test, you know, some 2 or 3 year old and something about a cookie, and well, I can understand lying if I'm not going to get my cookie, right? But it was just interesting, you know, like, they were all kind of the same age, and what is innate in us that we start out and we start trying to work the system, if you will, you know? And I just believe we're born that way, that we have a fallen nature, if you will. I'm bent towards rebellion towards God. I want to do what I want to do. And you can call that whatever you want, but I think that's why I was so rebellious. But adding to this was the abuse that took place in my childhood. Once I became a teenager, most everyone in my path paid for the wrongs done against me. Once I was able to fend for myself, I did just that. And this included not needing God anymore in my life. I knew no real love, no tenderness from my family of origin. Physical needs were met, yes, but there were secrets, lies, and fear that paralyzed each of our family members. Each member lived in silent desperation. I was desperate to escape, and I did just that when I was 18 years old. I forged ahead to make my way, do my own thing, and serve only myself. So step 2 prepared me to proceed with steps 3 through 12 by showing me I had to let go of my need to control everything and accept outside help, both in a higher power and both in the people that were filling these rooms. So last week I had shared my first spiritual experience, and it was when I was in the bar drinking my last drink, and how I knew in that moment, intoxicated, as I was telling everyone that you're never going to see me again, I'm going to stop drinking. And that took place on October 10th, 1985. So my last drink was the 9th. My second spiritual experience, and I do call these experiences because they really marked me, I'll never forget them, was when I was in rehab. And in rehab, you go to a lot of meetings, I guess they call them, you know, classes. We did do meetings, but there were a lot of classes to educate us about what is wrong with us and the pitfalls that are available, or the pitfalls that are out there. So I remember the one class was the statistics about if there's 20 of you here, only 2 of you will be sober in a year. And my roommate and I went back, her name was Rita, which is amazing I remember that because I don't remember anything. I took Helen's packet home. She forgets a lot too, so that kind of was nice. It's like, oh, it must be an age thing because she was like looking for her stuff. So I remember going back to the room with Rita, who was crying. And she was crying like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? You know, I'm not going to make it. I'm going to be one of the 18. And I just remember, like Bob or Bill talks about the wind blowing through and through, you know. Well, I was looking out Hammett's window. I don't know exactly what was there. What floor were we on, Gina? The 4th? So I just remember walking in and the curtain was open and hearing all this, and I had a thought as strong as could be that says, yes, Penny, you and who else is going to be making it to the year? It was just so powerful. And so you know, when Eric said last night, like, what do you mean you need to take step two? You know, I think I kind of took step two there in rehab, whatever a day it was of the 20-some day stay. Aww, it's just God bells. So instead of God of my understanding, it was a God I was coming to understand. I saw I was exercising my will to keep him out, and he was exercising his will to show me grace and love, to penetrate my hard heart. So this was the first time I looked at my relationship with God as a partnership. There's a concept. It was not God doing everything, and it wasn't me doing everything. I didn't have to fend for myself anymore. There was this God that was wanting to love me, care for me, and protect me from myself, and to stop hurting. Uh-oh. How are we doing on time? Oh, good, because I need more papers. No. But anyways, it was, to kind of sum it all up, my experience with step two was quick. I knew there was a God. I found him in rehab. I built upon that moving forward. I didn't have to come up with a power greater myself. I knew who that power was. I just didn't know the depth of that higher power. The other part, I have 3 pages on God. I could have kept going. I have like big type 1 page on insanity. It is an honest program, right? Well, I think maybe I can ad lib a little bit more on here. Insanity is the second part, right? That God could restore us to sanity. I had no issue with that part either. I knew I was insane. I did find something online, and I thought this was so descriptive of what I was doing with mine. And we've heard so many things like doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. But I wanted to preserve what I thought was my solution, which was alcohol. And one person's way of defining preservation is that it is compulsive, hopeless, helpless, automatic, and unsatisfying. Boy, does that describe my alcoholism, right? There is a desire to stop, but stopping doesn't feel like an option. That describes me to a T. I sensed booze was not working, but I was compelled to continue drinking anyways. That is the best definition I've ever have come across for insanity. So in addition to lying to everyone around me, I lied to myself the most. You know, it is remarkable when I think about, you know, you hear people say, well, sometimes I would lie just for the sake of lying, like I didn't even have to lie, but I didn't find myself doing that. I was always lying in order to cover up something, to not reveal what was really going on. But the way I lied to myself, like I was totally incapable of grasping what my insanity is, what I was incapable of grasping. You know, one of the ways that I will try to describe insanity is, you know, this thought that this time it will be different, like we've all had that, right? And I remember we were living in a lovely basement house that had no top on it. It was just the basement. We had no central air. We had a wood stove. We had cinder block walls. And we lived out in the country, and when people would come to visit, the first thing I saw was their feet, because the little windows were up top, and we, oh my goodness. I have to tell you this story. I forgot about that little basement house. I mean, the intention was my dad purchased the property, he put it in the basement, here you go, lovely newlyweds, one day you'll build a house there. Yeah, it was a nice story. But my Eric and I came home many times drunk while we were living there. And one night in particular, we had one of those they called suburban wood stoves, like they were supposed to keep the wood burn. Well, when you're gone for 2 days, it goes out. I mean, you got to have somebody chucking something in there. So we came home one night, and I just, for whatever reason, I wasn't blacked out. There's this huge log in there. It's like 3 a.m. It's freezing. And he's got a blowtorch, and he's trying to get this hunk of kindling, you know, started. I mean, just, that was everyday life. Just complete weirdness. So living there, I was in the basement house, and we're getting ready to go out to drink. And I was looking at myself in the mirror, and I'm getting all dolled up, you know. And the thought came across, like, you're getting all dolled up, and you're going to be a mess in about 6 hours. It just was so, like, surreal. Like, it was like maybe a mortician, you know. Here you are deceased, and they're making you look pretty, and here I was all pretty, and I was dying on the inside. It was weird. It was such a fake thing that I was doing, and it was very apparent to me. And I know we've heard lots of stories from our other members about, you know, seeing ourselves for who we really were in the mirror, whether it be in a bar or whenever during a hangover. So that was, this time it will be different. That was a reality check right then. The other one was, I will never do that again. You know, and I think about the dangerous situations that I found myself in, or thought that I might have been in. Many times I would leave, you know, we were living out in the country then, and Eric wasn't working then, and we had one car, and I would drive into Erie, and it was Friday, and then I wouldn't come home to Sunday afternoon. You know, I just leave him stranded out there because he was a problem. And I think there were a few times that I came to in places I have no idea where I was at. I don't know if I was in danger. It kind of creeps me out a little bit now. And I come home and Eric would say, where have you been? And like, I don't know. I don't know where I've been out there, you know. So, you know, the promise, I'll never do that again. Well, how do I know if I ever did it again? Because I was a blackout drinker. The other lie, the other insane thought was, I'll never get that bad. And Eric sometimes shares this in his story. This is early on in my drinking career, like probably 19, 20 years old. And living in a small town, there were a lot of bars. And one of the bars opened like at 7 a.m. And I remember being in there, and we were the cool kids. We were in there playing pool and drinking. And we're all judging the older fellas that were shaking and getting their drink in to calm their nerves. And somehow, we didn't have a problem because we were playing pool. I mean, just that whole, I'll never get that bad. I never saw myself that bad. So that was part of my insanity also. So I'm just going to tie this up to the best of my ability here and say that God brought me to the realization I was empty inside. God brought circumstances and people into my life to show me how empty I was. I was finally ready to stop, you know, preserving my old self and embrace the new me. Thanks.
Now we come to questions and answers.
Hi, I'm Laura. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Laura.
Thanks, Penny. You explained your experience of your spiritual awakening when you were in rehab. And have you ever heard other people explain that it took them a long time to come to a spiritual experience? Mm-hmm. Because that is not usual,
right,
to feel that right off the
bat. Right.
And so do you know other people, or can you share with us? But it did take some others some time.
Yeah, I mean, the big book tells, and was it Appendix A or B or 2 or 3? I don't know. You know, it explains the spiritual experience versus a spiritual awakening. And most of my spiritual growth has been an awakening. And I think I described that in that, you know, I came to realize I didn't understand my higher power, but I knew who my higher power was going to be. And the last, you know, 33 years have been me discovering at a deeper level and experiencing and learning and educating myself about that higher power. These experiences come out of the blue, for me anyways. And yes, I have heard, and Bill's story is a beautiful description of an experience, like, you'll never forget it. You know, I still get goosebumps when I tell the story. It's like God sweeps you away, or whatever your higher power, you know, whatever that might mean for you. Over the years, I have definitely heard a lot of those stories, especially in the rooms of AA. There's just a knowing. My third spiritual experience was when I was about 31 years old, and I was in to have a routine surgery, and it was discovered that I had ovarian cancer. And I'll never forget, they kind of brought me out of the anesthesia, and my doctor was there, and my husband was there, and lots of concerned looks on their face, and, you know, hey, we found this out, and, you know, we're going to put you back under and perform a certain, you know, more surgery. And it was like, okay. It was like, I knew I was going to be okay. There's just, I think a spiritual experience always is coupled with a knowing, a weird knowing, because I'm a very, people that know me also know how indecisive I am. So, really, yeah. I hope that answered your question.
Hey, Penny. Good job. Mary, an alcoholic.
Mary.
You know, I wasn't really aware until recently that there are groups of AA people who, they call themselves agnostics, mm-hmm. and that they just simply don't have a higher power. Mm-hmm. And I guess I can't really wrap my head around mm-hmm. that, because it mm-hmm. doesn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. Can you address this? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, my thoughts is I don't understand it, because the whole book is about having a spiritual experience. I think that this program offers so many good tools. I mean, the 12 steps in themselves, even though it's a path to spiritual enlightenment, if you will, to reliance upon a higher power, I think that, you know, even though I'm not athletic, it doesn't mean that if I started going to the gym on a regular basis, I'm going to have a good result of some sort. I'm going to see enough change that, you know, I will be happy at some level. Happy enough with, you know, and I think I kind of addressed that. Happy enough with sobriety, or happy enough with a nicer body, or nicer enough with a better job. That's not enough for me. You know, I needed more. I wanted that step 11 100%. I wanted to continue seeking my higher power. So I think that there are a lot of things. There's some people that get sober not in AA. You know, how does that happen? I don't know. This is the only thing I've ever known. When I work with people, you know, sooner or later, early on in that relationship of sponsorship, it's like, this is all I got to offer you. You know, I don't know how people get sober otherwise. I don't understand how a spiritual program can be worked in a non-spiritual way. I don't understand that. But it's not for me to figure out either. You know, thank goodness that, you know, the concept of a God as you understand him has allowed this program to go all over the world. So something here works, whether it be the meetings, the discipline, the working one-on-one with another person, the getting honest, the inventory. There's so many things that, I think will keep people sober, but I don't know how happy they really are, for the long ride. Oh, poor Kevin. We got pitch hitter here.
Yeah, I can't let you out that early.
Sure.
My show doesn't start till 9 anyway, so.
Oh.
Anyway, thank you again for coming out. This is really, it's a tough ask, and it's even tougher to do.
Mm-hmm.
And just by the turnout, everybody really appreciates it, whether we say it or not. But I want to, my question is, when you're working with somebody and you work the first two steps with you and they're just kind of okay, all right,
mm-hmm.
and you already said that you kind of let them kind of follow through,
mm-hmm.
and you, I don't know if you do you like act as if, is that the kind of what you do, is with their kind of just okay, I'll do step one and step two. Now we're at step three. It's like, So how do you coach somebody along when they're not, I got to get sober. Yeah, I kind of...
I swear you were listening to the phone call I was having with my one sponsee tonight. a lot of this I got to rehearse with her. I think it's awesome. No, not you. What was I going to say? Yeah, that might help me, right? I was on a path too. I had it all mapped out, and now it's gone. Well, working with a person tonight, I guess I was here. It's coming back. So it's okay to question. That's what it was. It's okay to question whatever higher. I think God enjoys us questioning His existence. And so, working with this one particular sponsee, I think sometimes we think we're doing something wrong. I had a million questions. I had a whole bunch of things I didn't understand. And that's when I did the a la carte. And I had to do that. Because if I didn't do a la carte, I was going to step away completely. So, was it God's grace that kept me around and seeking Him long enough that I wanted to get off the fence? Because I tell you what, I was miserable. And I remember the morning I decided to commit. It's kind of like when we know we have a drinking problem and we don't commit to the solution. That was my experience. And so working with women that are struggling in that area, I kind of just remember what it was like for me. What was that like when I was doubting? I don't think that it's an issue. I think that if they just keep coming back, if not anything else, have faith that there's. I always share, you're not alone. You're not alone. You're not alone. Because I think sometimes we feel that we're so alone in our questioning and our doubt and our hardness of heart that somehow God's going to slam the door on us. God's not going to slam the door on us, but I think a lot of people feel that way. And also I think another thing to consider, I always delve into trying to determine with a new sponsee, like, what was their spiritual upbringing? Like, you know, were you raised in a church? Were you not raised in a church? Did you have other beliefs of God? You know, is it crystals? Is it, you know, Eastern religion? Is it yoga? You know, finding all that out allows me to ask those probing questions to kind of, you know, okay, we need to start identifying who this higher power is. And if you don't know how to question someone from their previous experiences, then they can't work on that by answering the question. Because that's what happened to me when I was doing this. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, I can see that what I did was the thing I thought I didn't do, which was to have a God of my understanding. But I did have a God of my understanding because I chose to just kind of, like, I didn't understand everything completely. Thank goodness I took that route and not another. Did that answer your question? Kind of. Yeah. 7:20. We're doing good. I have more material next week. All right.